Isaiah chapter 41, I'm going to read verse 20. Isaiah 41, verse 20. That they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord hath done this and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. In this 41st chapter, if you read it, you see that God is reminding Israel of who He is. He promises them His miraculous protection and provision. The chapter basically reveals that the Lord is at work on the behalf of His people and that He wants us to always be aware of that fact. Now, our text here in verse 20, it's kind of an odd verse just to read for a text because it's a subordinate clause. But we see that it begins with the word that, which in this case is a conjunction introducing a subordinate, or if you prefer, a dependent clause. And then you'll notice about halfway through the verse, you see that again. And again, a conjunction in this case, introducing yet another subordinate or dependent clause. So the verse is really two subordinate or dependent clauses. In other words, it's not a sentence. It depends on something else for its meaning, for its understanding. So a subordinate or dependent clause is dependent upon an independent clause, which is a sentence, for its meaning. We can't understand it without the independent clause or the sentence. Now, in this case, there are several main or independent clauses. Verse 20 would refer directly back to verses 17 through 19. More remotely, it refers back to what has been said throughout the chapter. But we see contextually, verse 20 receives its meaning or becomes meaningful based upon what is written before we get to verse 20. I want to speak tonight on the purpose of the providential blessings of God. What is the purpose of God's blessing us? What is the purpose of God working in our life? The purpose of the providential blessings of God. Now, our text, verse 20, provides the reason, provides the purpose of the blessings of God and God acting on our behalf. Again, the first word is that. It's a word that expresses a purpose. That. What follows is the purpose. It is the purpose of what has gone before. Now, so we in order to understand verse 20 being a dependent clause, there has to be a main idea that verse 20 is based upon. And in this chapter, if you look at the chapter, In the chapter, beginning with verse 8, there are several independent clauses. That is, they stand by themselves. They're sentences. Doesn't need anything else to explain them. There are several independent clauses or sentences that speak of the person, the acts, the blessings, the purpose, and the promises of God. And our text, verse 20, is dependent upon these and is a statement for the reason for these things. So verse 20 is the reason that we get from the acts and the blessings and the promises of God. In verses 8 and 9, we see the saving grace of God. He says, "But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, thou art my servant, I have chosen thee." So that is a statement of God's saving grace. It is seen in the two names by which the people are addressed. And we see that in verse 8, Israel and Jacob, referring to the same people. Israel and Jacob. In Genesis chapter 32 and on, from Genesis 32 on, these two names, Israel and Jacob, are used to refer to the old and the new man. Now, if we go back to Genesis 32 and look at verse 27 and verse 28, and he said unto them, What is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. So Israel was Jacob. And that holds true here in Isaiah 41. Israel is God's servant, but don't ever forget Israel was Jacob. Now who changed Jacob to Israel? God did. And it speaks of the grace of God and, of course, is a picture of salvation. So here in Genesis 32, verses 27 and 28, it's no longer Jacob, but Israel. That is, a transformation has taken place, a transformation of grace. Now back into Isaiah chapter 41, Israel, art my servant. But thou, Israel, art my servant. Israel was Jacob. But Israel has been changed from Jacob. And also notice Jacob. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob. Israel is God's servant, not Jacob. It is salvation, and then you become a servant. But it was Jacob who was chosen. Jacob is a user. He's a usurper. He's a deceiver. He's a contender against God. And yet we read, Jacob, have I chosen? What does that mean? Well, it means just what chosen means today. Jacob, have I picked? Jacob, have I selected? Was there anything in Jacob? No. This is grace. Jacob is now Israel. You cannot have Israel, my servant, without Jacob, whom I have chosen. Now in verse 14 of Isaiah 41, notice he calls him, thou worm, Jacob. This is the one that God chose. Jacob. Now notice verse 9 in Isaiah 41, God's workings on their behalf. He says, I have taken from the ends of the earth, referring to themselves, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, thou art my servant. That is, Israel is God's servant. So we see there are workings of God on their behalf. I have taken, I have called thee. God is working on their behalf. And then there's a reminder of two things. Thou art my servant, and this is because I have chosen thee while you were Jacob. I did not choose you as Israel. You became Israel because I chose Jacob, who has nothing to offer unto God. In Romans 9:13, or the remarkable statement is, Jacob have I loved. Most people think that Esau have I hated is the remarkable statement. No, that's not what's remarkable here. What's remarkable here is, Jacob have I loved. That's where the mystery is. The mystery is not in Esau have I hated. The mystery, the wonder is, Jacob have I loved. So here in verse 8 and 9 of Isaiah 41, we have the saving grace of God. Also in verse 9, there's the faithfulness of God. The latter part of the verse says, I have chosen thee, and then notice, and not cast thee away. I have not cast thee away. I've been faithful. And in verse 17, there is the promise of the same in the future. In the latter part of verse 17, he says, I, the God of Israel, which is Jacob transformed, I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. So God has declared, I have been faithful to you, and I will continue to be faithful to you. In verse 10, we have the promise of God. He says, fear thou not, for I am with thee. There is the presence of the Lord. There is the presence of God. That is part of the providential blessings of the Lord, is the presence of God. Also in verse 10, we see the suitableness or the relevancy of God. He says, I am thy God. It's not just I am God, but I am thy God. In other words, I am suitable to you. I am relevant to you. I am thy God. In verse 10, there's the promise of infused strength. He says, I will strengthen thee. That is, this is a promise. He says, I will fortify you. I will bolster you. I will reinforce you. I will build you up. He is saying, I will give you the strength that you need. That's the providential blessings of God. And he goes on to say, yea, that's a word of certainty, I will help thee. I will give you strength. It's not I will give you strength and then leave you on your own, but I will give you strength and I will help thee. So he's not just helping us by giving us strength, but I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. That is, I will give you assistance. I will give you aid. I will relieve you. I will avail myself to you. I will enable you. I will supply. I will furnish. I will help thee. Again, the providential blessings of God. And then notice what he says. I will uphold thee. That is, I will maintain thee. I will sustain you. I will preserve you. I will protect you. I will defend you. I will keep you with the right hand of my righteousness. The implication, again, of his presence. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you. And I will do this by my presence. Providential blessings of God. There are enemies. In verses 11 and 12, there's the infusion of weakness into their enemies. Notice in verse 11, behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing. Israel had powerful enemies. And God says they shall be as nothing for two reasons. One, my presence. Two, I will weaken them. But they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shall not find them. In other words, God's going to take them away. Even them that contended with thee, they that war against thee shall be as nothing. That's the second time. And as a thing of naught. That's the third time. He tells them three times, they're nothing. They're nothing. Because you have my presence, the providential blessings of God. In verses 13 and 14, there's the promised assurance of God. For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, I will help thee. Fear thou not, fear not, thou worm Jacob, and you men of Israel. Fear not. He refers to both, Jacob and Israel, old and new. Fear not. Here's why. I will help thee. So you have, again, the assurance of the Lord. And then he reminds them who he is. I'm thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. In verses 15 and 16, there's the promise again of vigor. Something more here than strength. He said, behold, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument, having teeth, and shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shall make the hills as chaff. Thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And thou shalt rejoice in the Lord, and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel. He is promising to give them spiritual health. He is promising to give them spiritual strength, spiritual energy, spiritual life, spiritual vitality, spiritual zeal, spiritual passion. He says, you will have all of these things. And then in verses 17 through 19, there's the promise of miraculous spiritual refreshment. He says, when the poor and needy seek water, and there is none. That's a problem. They seek water and there is none. And their tongue faileth for thirst. I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. And as we've said before, you don't expect to find rivers in high places. Fountains and valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the shittim tree, and the myrtle, and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree, and the pine, and the box tree together. So there's the promise of a miraculous spiritual refreshment. So you look over all of these verses, and the main idea expressed is God. That's the main idea. That's always the main idea. The main idea, the main thought is God. 18 times in these verses, God uses the personal pronoun I. 18 times. He also uses the personal pronoun my 3 times. He also says I am 2 times. He uses the phrase I have, speaking of what he's doing or what he has done. He uses that phrase 3 times. And he uses the phrase I will 13 times. And we see the phrase, I the Lord, 1 time. And the phrase, I the God of Israel, 1 time. The main idea is God in relation to His people. We must be doctrinally sound on who God is. But we must never view God apart from His people. We view God all through the Bible. We see God. And we see God in relation to His people. God is sovereign. But He's sovereign in relation to His people. God is almighty. He's almighty in relation to His people. And on we could go. So the main idea of these verses leading into our text, verse 20, is God in relation to His people. He is telling them who He is. He is telling them what He has done on their behalf, what He is doing on their behalf, and what He will continue to do on their behalf. So looking at all of this, in the light of our text verse, you see that you and I, that God has saved and transformed us by His grace. Then we come to verse 20, that. God has saved me, God has transformed me, that. There's a reason. He didn't just do it for the sake of doing it. There's a reason. We see also that God has been faithful to us. And the promises of God continue. And then we can jump to verse 20. That God has been faithful to us. Each one of us. The fact that we're here declares that. That. We have the promise of God's presence. That. We have the promise of God's suitability to us. That is, there's a purpose for it. We have the promise of His strength. That. We have the promise of His help. That. We have the promise of His assurance. That. We have the promise of vigor. That. We have the promise of His miraculous provision and refreshment. That. We have the reminder of who He is. That. So in all of these things, there is a purpose. And it is a purpose that regards ourselves. So, verse 20, that, they. That they. I have done all of these things. I am reminding you of who I am. That. There's a reason. I do these things. And what follows the word that in verse 20 are the reasons and the purpose of God's providential dealings with His people. With you and I. So let's look at this. Verse 20. That they may see. And then just skip several words. What are they going to see? that the hand of the Lord hath done this. I have done all of these things. I will continue to do these things that you may see that the hand of the Lord hath done these things. To see. To see means to notice. Let's be honest. There are a lot of things God does in our everyday life we don't even notice. But God does, everything He does in our life is that we would take notice of the hand of the Lord. That they may see, or that they may notice the hand of the Lord. To see is to become aware of. You see something, you have become aware of it. Again, let's be honest. Perhaps most of the time we're unaware of the hand of the Lord. But God does what He does, that we would be aware of the hand of the Lord. To see, seeing is a sense. It's one of our senses. So to see is to sense. That they may sense the hand of the Lord. It means to identify. If you see something, you can identify what it is you're seeing. So God works in our life and brings things about in our lives that we may see, that we may notice, that we might become aware, that we might sense, and that we might identify the hand of the Lord. That's the reason for the blessings of God. What a blessed life to be aware, to be able to see the hand of the Lord, to be able to notice and recognize the hand of the Lord. Notice also, He says, and there's a progression here, by the way, that they may see and know. Know what? The hand of the Lord. He says, I've done all of these things on your behalf. I'm going to continue to do all of these things on your behalf. Not just to make your life easy, but that you might see and know the hand of the Lord, that you may know. Now notice several verses, and we'll come back to Isaiah 41, and Exodus chapter 10, verse 2. He speaks of what things I have wrought in Egypt, and my signs which I have done among them, that ye may know how that I am the Lord. I've done these things that you may know how that I am the Lord. Not just that you may know that I am the Lord, but that you may know how that I am the Lord. Notice Exodus chapter 11, verse 7. But against any of the children of Israel shall not a dog move his tongue against man or beast. Notice that you may know. Why was God going to protect them this way? That you may know that the Lord doth put a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. That you might know. That you might know these things. Exodus 31, verse 13. Speak thou unto the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbath ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you. Notice in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 6. chapter 8 and verse 3. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know. Why did he do that? That he might make thee know. That he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Joshua chapter 4, verses 23 and verse 24. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you, until ye were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever. These are the purposes. And you remember the paralytic that the four individuals carried to Jesus. In Matthew chapter 9 and verse 6, he said, that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, I said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk. He said, I said that you might know. The reason I did it is that you might know. And I believe that everything that God brings into our lives is that we might see and that we might know the hand of God. And if we miss that, we've missed it all. We've missed it all. So that you may know. To know is to be informed. To see and to know. You can see something and not necessarily know. It is to be informed. To be informed about what? The hand of the Lord hath done this. To know something, we become familiar with it. Familiar with what? That the hand of the Lord hath done this. Means we're acquainted with it. To really know something means you experience it. God does these things that we might, God brings things into our lives, God works in our lives, brings things about in our lives that we may know. We might experience the hand of the Lord. Again, what a blessed life to know the hand of the Lord. These aren't things you just learn by reading. God deals in our lives for these reasons, that we might see, that we might know. Notice also, again, there's a progression here in verse 20 of Isaiah 41. And consider. And consider. We've moved beyond seeing and knowing. And consider. To consider is that we think about it. We think about a lot of things we shouldn't think about. He says, I have done all of these things and I continue to do these things in your life that you might consider the hand of the Lord, that you might think upon the hand of the Lord, that you might reflect back upon the hand of the Lord, that you might ponder it, that you might meditate upon it. That you might regard, that you would be mindful of the hand of the Lord. So God works in our lives, and God brings things about in our lives that we might consider the hand of the Lord. Notice also and understand, that they may understand. understanding is really a step beyond knowing. You can know something and not understand it. To understand means you comprehend. You begin to get a grasp of what? The hand of the Lord. It means you take it in. Means you begin to have an appreciation that the hand of the Lord hath done this. It means you believe it. You believe it. It means you're able to make application. Again, you can be theologically sound, and that's good. But if you cannot make personal application, it's useless. It's not going to help you. You have to have some understanding. And God says, I've worked in your lives. I continue to work in your lives. I bring things about in your life that you may understand that the hand of the Lord hath done this. So we see that you may see, know, consider, understand. Notice Isaiah 43, verse 10. Ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, and my servant, whom I have chosen, that ye may know and believe me. That ye may know. The reason you're my witnesses, the reason you're my servant, that ye may know and believe me and understand that I am. And understand that I am. Before me there was no God formed, neither shall there be after me. That thou may understand. In our text, again, there's a spiritual progression. God works in our life. He brings things about in our life that we may progress spiritually. No matter what it is. If God chastises us, it's for the purpose of spiritual progression. Whatever God brings into our lives, whatever God allows in our lives, is for the purpose of spiritual progression. That we might see, know, consider, and understand that the hand of the Lord hath done this. And then notice again in our text in Isaiah 41 and 20, and we'll be done. That they may see and know and consider and understand together. Together. What a blessed people, what a blessed church that sees, knows, considers, and understands together that the hand of the Lord hath done this. So God has, throughout our lives, done marvelous, marvelous things. Why? Why did He do it? That we may know, that we may see, that we may know, that we may consider, that we may understand that the hand of the Lord hath done these things. And when we see it, know it, consider it, and understand it, that strengthens faith. God doesn't just bless, God doesn't just bring things into your life or cause things to happen in your life because He doesn't have anything else to do. But it's for us spiritually that we might make spiritual progression. It needs to be so in our lives individually. It needs to be so in our lives collectively. You know, people say all the time, I don't know why God is doing such and such in my life. And I understand what they mean by that. But you should have an idea why God does what He does. It tells us right here that we would see, that we would know, that we would consider, that we would understand. We know that much. We might not know a lot of other things. We might not know a lot of other reasons, but we know that much. That we might know. That we might understand. He does these things for our spiritual progression. The problem with God's people is they try to understand things that God isn't going to let you understand. And what God allows them to understand, they turn a blind eye to. God help us to realize that everything that happens in our lives, it's for our spiritual progression. And if we don't spiritually, if we do not make spiritual progression, we lose. We lose. Oh, to see the hand of the Lord every day. To know it. To consider it. And to have a deeper understanding of it every single day of our lives. That's a wonderful life. Brother Seth, if you'll come and lead us.